Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
It's Mic Check! It's Mic Check! The podcast by Mike Myers!
And we're clear.
Hello, horny babies, and welcome to another brand new episode of Mic Check, the only podcast where two funny little fellas hang out with each other and talk about the movies of Mike Myers just to check if they're still Shagadelic, baby.
Hang on a tick. It's season two, baby.
Groovy, baby, yeah.
Welcome to Mic Check season two, funnier, sexier, cooler. This is the only podcast that goes through the entire exhaustive filmography of Saturday Night Live and its alum just to check if Mike Myers is in those movies. We've broadened out a little bit here. I'm one of your co-hosts, Cameron James, and I'm sitting opposite a glorious, shining light of comedy that I like to call Alexi Toliopoulos.
And I like to be called that at all times, in fact. It's me, Alexi Toliopoulos, and I'm sitting across from a beautiful little glory hole called Cameron James.
Glad to be a glory hole. I'm the middleman between two different people experiencing pleasure.
Oh. Well, it's so exciting to be here on Mic Check Season 2 with you, isn't it, baby?
It sure is, baby. Now, what is Mike Sex?
What is Mike Sex? He's...
What is Mike Sex?
Male, yes, please.
What is Mic Check Season 2 going to be all about, Lex?
Well, Mic Check Season 2, we thought that we wanted to go deeper into the history of the religion we like to call comedy.
Yeah.
And what is the pinnacle of that religion, the most important in the history? It's Saturday Night Live.
SNL.
SNL. Now, Cameron, what is SNL?
SNL, to me, is show business.
And could you elaborate on that historically? What is it?
It's a variety show that they film at 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York, New York. The place so nice, they named it twice.
Wowza!
Yeah.
And who hosts that show?
Well, that's the funny thing about SNL, Lex.
That's the funny thing?
That's the most hilarious thing about the show.
Yeah.
Is that they don't have a host. They have a rotating system of celebrities coming in and out to host
the
show.
You had me at celebrities coming in and out.
They also have musical guests.
Such as?
The Roots.
Linkin Park.
Korn.
Sean Paul.
Shaggy!
And musical guest Childish Gambino!
Well, that's a funny fact because Childish Gambino was also the host of the same episode.
Holy fuckeroli.
So what we're going to be...
Can that guy do it all?
That guy actually can do everything.
Wow.
That's actually one of the coolest things about Donald Glover is that he can freaking do it all.
The guy can sing, the guy can dance, the guy can act, the guy can make you laugh. And also, he'll make you think.
Yeah. He's a renaissance man. A polymath, if you will.
Okay.
So what we're going to be talking about in this season of Mic Check is we're going to go through every single film that was produced by SNL, adapted from an SNL sketch, or banking on SNL stars.
Yeah.
And there's some really good shit in there. Obviously, Wayne's World is one of those movies.
We've covered that enough.
We probably would.
But obviously, we will talk about Wayne's World throughout this whole thing because it is a cinematic masterpiece.
But I mean, we've got some great stuff in here. Some of the greatest films of all time fall under this umbrella. And
Coneheads.
Spies Like Us.
Yeah.
But also, some of the worst films of all time.
Oh, big time.
On this list. I'm going to rattle off just a handful of them.
Maybe
now.
Just go through the actual SNL official movies.
All right, so this is a list of the films that are strict adaptations from SNL sketches to feature film.
Yes, okay. The strictest rule.
This is strict, okay? I'm very fucking strict.
You're scrutinized.
Yeah.
All of the movies listed on IMDb, that's where you found them, went on IMDb/all movies ever, and then you went and just looked at the ones that sounded like SNL movies and added them to a list.
Yeah, so we've got, okay, The Blues Brothers.
Wow, great movie. Can't wait to talk about it on this episode, I hope.
This
things,
very episode.
Unless things take a turn for the strange.
We're going to discuss The Blues Brothers. We've got Wayne's World.
Mm-hmm.
That's the next one. Coneheads, Wayne's World 2. So far, pretty freaking good.
Good list of movies.
Good list
so
of
far.
Movies. It's Pat.
Wow, I've heard of this. Famously, it's the worst movie ever made, isn't it?
Yeah. And
currently sitting at 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It grossed $60,000 at the box
office. I heard it grossed 60,000 people out. So, what is that movie if you're not initiated? Because it's a pretty iconic stinker.
Well, the character is called Pat.
Yeah.
And she was played by... Oh, sorry. It was played...
Or they.
They were played by Julia Sweeney.
Yeah.
And
the great Julia Sweeney.
The great Julia Sweeney, who used to date Quentin Tarantino.
Sweeney and Tarantino.
Yeah. And Pat was famous. The sketches were about a character that no one knew the gender of.
That's it.
Joke of the character was that, is it a boy or is it a girl? And this movie takes that premise and stretches it out to a whopping 100 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
So that's going to be great to watch when we finally get to that.
Lorne, please have mercy upon thy soul, I tell ya.
We've got Stuart Saves His Family after that, which is an Al Franken movie.
Starring disgraced Senator Al Franken. Okay, excellent.
That I have no idea anything about.
No idea about that film.
Then we have the second sequel on the list, Blues Brothers 2000.
Wow, finally bringing the Blues Brothers into the year 1998.
Yeah, that's my favorite fact about that movie is that it came out 2 years before the year 2000.
Yeah, so preempted a lot of stuff.
A lot
of crazy shit happens in that movie.
Yeah, the Y2K happens in that movie.
It correctly predicted the tragic death of John Belushi only 15 years after it happened.
Then A Night at the Roxbury, which was a big favorite of mine growing up.
Mm-hmm. I've actually never seen that movie. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that one's going to be a fun one. Superstar, which is the Molly Shannon one.
That's another one I can't wait to watch.
Never
I love
it.
Molly Shannon. I love Will Ferrell. And I love that character, Mary Catherine Gallagher, from SNL, but I've yet to see the movie.
Yeah. The Ladies' Man, Tim Meadows, one of my faves.
Wow.
And I also loved that movie a lot growing up. It also has Will Ferrell in it.
Great.
And I think it might be bad.
Yeah, it might be. Tim Meadows is bad. And I'm spelling that with 8 A's. He's awesome.
Yeah, the guy
He's
rules.
He's one of the funniest dudes, I reckon, and one of the best supporting characters in comedy.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see him as a leading man.
Yeah, dude. Well, you're going to very soon. Also, the last SNL movie produced so far is MacGruber from 2010.
Which is one we have already discussed on this podcast.
But I think we should do it again.
It'd be worth a revisit.
Yeah. So they're the official SNL movies, but there's also so many others that go either side of this. There's... Austin Powers isn't technically an SNL movie, but it has a lot of SNL alum in it, so I'm going to count that.
Yeah.
We've got...
Well, we're not going to record another...
No.
Okay.
We probably won't do it again, but there's movies like Vacation, Animal House.
21st anniversary of Austin Powers coming up.
Yeah, we should do one every year.
Yeah. Animal House, of course.
Animal House, Vacation, the Ghostbusters movies, Beverly Hills Cop. There's so many. Zoolander, Anchorman.
Basically, any movie that John Landis had his little... fingers in the 80s.
That's true. And that is going to be the first one that we do in this very fucking episode.
Yes, we will be talking about the legendary musical, The Blues Brothers.
That's right. That is what we're going to be talking about today. But before we do, you know what I think we should do?
Mm-hmm.
I think we should do this at the start of every episode for season two.
I absolutely agree with you.
I think we should check in on our boy Mike and see what he's been up to in a little segment that we like to call Breckenmeyer News.
Hang on a second. You mispronounced
what?
That.
What do you mean?
You said Breckenmeyer News.
Yes, that's what I said. Breckenmeyer News.
No, we're talking Breaking Myers News.
What did I say?
Breckenmeyer.
That's right.
He's a creator of Robot Chicken.
Breckenmeyer News. Oh, did he create Robot Chicken?
I think he's involved with the Robot Chicken fellas in some way.
I love those Robot Chicken
boys. Well, okay, dude. We'll do a quick Breckenmeyer News. Breckenmeyer, there is rumor that Breckenmeyer will return in the reboot of Rat Race.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's called RuPaul's Rat Race, and it stars a lot of funny guys, such as Rowan Atkinson, John Cleese, Breckenmeyer, getting dressed up as ladies and rats.
Now, that's really funny stuff.
Thank you so much. I prepared that bit over 7 years ago. I've been waiting to use it for a long time. Finally, it presented itself to me.
Some more up-and-coming Breckenmeyer news is that he is been cast in an upcoming comedy drama called Changeland, written and directed by one of the Robot Chicken Boys himself, Seth Green.
Seth Green.
Yeah, great.
Scotty, don't.
Great cast lined up for this movie. Seth Green, Breckenmeyer, Macaulay Culkin, and some other people.
Wow, a lot of former kids.
Yeah, it's
they
really
all started
cool
as
stuff.
Children, those guys.
It's really cool stuff. Filming actually began in Thailand in June of last year. So
they're probably having a lot of fun making
They're
that.
Probably having a real blast with Changeland.
Yeah.
So that's Breckenmeyer News.
Yeah, so that's our segment, Breckenmeyer News. Let's kick into Breaking Myers News. We got three stories to cover on this first segment of Breaking Myers News. Story number one, we are going to start in a bit of a sad place. Tragically, we did lose Vern Troyer, best known for playing Mini-Me in the Austin Powers series of films. It's very sad. Mini-Me was, I think, one of the most iconic characters in comedy cinema ever, I would say.
Yeah,
ever.
It's an iconic role. It's instantly everyone knows who he is when you say Vern Troyer. He's a household name.
Household name. And I think that's a fabulous character, really up the ante in those sequels.
Yep.
And that is due 100% to the commitment to an insane character that Vern Troyer did. It's a fabulous physical performance.
It really is. Have you prepared a highlights reel?
We've got a montage of some of Vern Troyer's best scenes from the Mike Myers films, Austin Powers, Spy Who Shagged Me. Wonderful stuff, Vern. We do truly miss you.
That's really good stuff.
I know that this is very silly and goofy podcast, but I'm serious right now. I do love Vern Troyer, and it's really sad to have seen you gone.
Rest in peace, Vern. Now, let's move on to some more happy Breaking Myers news. Mm-hmm. The guy has made a freaking appearance as recently as this week on late night television.
Yeah, Mike Myers is basically a bit of a regular right now on the ABC series Jimmy Kimmel.
He's pretty much a cast member. Should we say it?
Mike Myers is a cast member of Jimmy Kimmel Live.
He's a cast member of Jimmy Kimmel Live.
So who was he playing on this episode? It's one of those famous Kimmel sketches where he's standing on the monologue stage of Jimmy Kimmel Live. He's a famous comedian, best known as Man Show. And he does a little video conference call to a little guy known as
Dr. Harold Bornstein, who was Donald Trump's former doctor, who has been kind of fired and outed by the Trump administration.
He has come clear that he did forge the letters that were dictated to him by Donald Trump saying that he was the most fit man to ever be president, which is a goldmine for comedy because just by the presence of Donald Trump, who's a known fat fuck, You can tell that that could not be the case.
Yeah, there's no way. Like, Obama, way fitter. Mm. And I mean that in the British sense. The guy's hot.
The guy's a freaking babe. They might call him Obaba.
Yeah, he's magically babelicious. Yeah. In French, he would be called La Renard, and he would be hunted with only his cunning to protect him.
And if he was a president, they'd call him Abraham Lincoln.
Hang on a sec. The guy was a freaking president. So, Mike Myers played Dr. Harold Bornstein mm-hmm. in a conference call or a Skype call to Jimmy Kimmel's studio audience, and it was a classic Myers character.
It was a brand new character, which
brand
is awesome.
Brand new, but just had all the hallmarks of the ship we like about yep. Mike. I mean,
he's totally insane.
He had catchphrases yep. and he was insane.
And I think the way that this character looks, Harold Bornstein, is a very, I guess, I can't even describe, really very Willie Nelson-esque looking guy.
He kind of looks like he took some brown acid yeah. back in 1969 and woke up here
today,
in 2018. Yeah. He looks like nothing has changed since the 60s. Yeah. Long hair, big beard,
yeah.
crazy little round John Lennon spectacles.
Yeah, little glasses.
Yeah, he's like he is a character already. So to see Mike put on a wig and beard yeah. and become this guy is awesome.
This is a character that would not look out of place in Arrested Development or something
yeah,
like
totally,
that.
Yeah, totally, totally.
And Mike is so funny as this character.
Yeah, his catchphrase that he keeps repeating is, well, he keeps asking Jimmy how his health is, but it always comes back around to asking if Jimmy needs boner pills.
Yeah. And also, he keeps on changing the way he pronounces Jimmy names. Once he calls him Gymnasium, I think, yeah. like that.
Jimothy.
Gym membership.
Jimmy Cakes.
So funny. I thought that was such a funny touch.
Really good. That was a really funny sketch. I hope to see him doing more and more of this stuff on TV. And not necessarily just doing Dr. Evil again or whatever, yeah. but like new characters like this.
Yeah.
I mean, get the guy back on SNL.
Get him back on SNL. I'm glad that he's moved over to ABC so we don't have to watch Fallon. We can watch Kimmel.
Yeah.
Sure, Dr. Evil is one of the funniest characters on Fallon right now. But the guy, Mike, is appearing on all of the shows right now.
Mm.
So I'm excited that he is part of the ABC family, looking ahead to Gong Show Season 2.
You know what I hope happens? He appears on frickin' Modern Family.
Oh my God, if he plays a character
yeah.
on that show?
Yeah.
What if Modern Family, they do one ep with like, hey, we got a new neighbor. Oh, it's me, fat bastard.
Can I say something about that Modern Family?
Yeah.
They're pretty freaking wacky.
Yeah, they're a little bit nutty, not unlike Fat Bastard Still.
Some more good news, and this is, I can't even, I actually haven't really wrapped my brain around this yet.
Yeah, this is insane to me, this one.
We had another surprise appearance from Mike Myers in the media this week, or in the last couple of days even. And this is not from ABC or NBC or any big media outlet. This comes from the Instagram account of Crowded House alum
yep.
Neil Finn.
And this is this news story is basically a mic check photo come to life. Because yep. in most of the photos that we've posted to announce episodes, I'm wearing a Crowded House t-shirt
yep.
because it's my favorite band ever. Neil Finn is one of my fucking heroes.
Whoa.
Yeah, I fucking love Neil Finn, man. Dude. He fucking rocks.
Okay, no need to be so crass.
Honestly, Neil Finn is a fucking ledge.
Dude.
He's a rock fuck star. He is a fucking icon of Australian New Zealand music industry.
I'd say he's an icon of world music.
He's Neil Finn is a fucking world musician.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the story here? Was this a Neil Finn gig?
Yeah, this was a gig at Largo, which is a bit of an iconic theater in
comedy
Los
nerd,
Angeles.
Theater, lots of John Bryan puts on musical shows there all the time. I believe yep. Crowded House played there quite a bit when they were around.
That's awesome.
It's a real cool theatery comedy music vibe.
Yeah, it's just
alternative.
Alternative, and it's a place that celebrates great art, I would say.
Fiona Apple got her start there, for example.
Wow.
As did Eugene Merman, etc. Like, it's a crazy spot.
God, to be on that stage the first time Eugene Merman
came
out and sung his songs tore it up.
Okay, so this was a Neil Finn solo show at Largo, and he brought on some special guests to perform with him. Guest number one, one of my favorite musicians and a hero of mine, a man who told me that it's cool to wear hats again.
Yeah.
Mac DeMarco.
Mac DeMarco, he's a great Canadian musician.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a fuck rock star.
He's a bit of a stoner rock star.
Yeah.
And then, second special guest, another one of both of our favorite musicians
here. We love
this
guy.
Kieran J. Callanan.
He's
a Sydney boy.
Sydney boy, local musician. Mm. I saw him open for Crowded House.
Mm-hmm.
I have met him a couple of times. I'm a big fan of this boy.
This guy's great. So this already, for you and I, this is a cool video.
Already I would watch this video.
Yeah, if someone said, check out this video, it's Neil Finn, it's Mac, and it's Kieran J. Callanan.
Yeah.
I go, give me a look at this video. Then my second question would be, what song are they singing? And what song were they singing?
They were singing BBC One, BBC Two, BBC Three,
and
BBC
who was
Four.
Singing it? Was
hang
it
on a second. BBC Five, BBC Six, BBC Seven, BBC Heaven. All right, BBC Peace.
And who was singing the song? Was it Neil or was it Mac or Kieran? Who
it was it? None other than Austin Powers himself.
Holy
Mike
freaking
Myers.
Shit.
The guy who is the titular Mike in Mic Check. And we're the Czech baby.
Got up on stage and sang BBC with some of our musical heroes.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And it was a closing song.
That's how they ended the set.
They ended the set of like three great musicians by getting the guy that played fucking Austin Powers and wrote the song BBC with his band Ming Tea, aka the Bangles. It's a secret people don't really know about too much.
It's Susanna Hoffs, dude.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So, yeah, that's Mike.
Isn't that crazy that they could have ended with... Don't Dream It's Over.
Don't Dream It's Over. They could have played Weather With You, something. By the way, if you watch the Crowded House live at the Opera House from 2016, you can see me in the audience at approximately 1 hour and 57 minutes and 45 seconds during Weather With You. So
you've shared the screen with Neil Finn.
I've shared the screen with Neil Finn before, yes.
So this is... You have 1 degree of separation away from Mike Myers.
Yeah. If you look up IMDb credits, you'll see in mine, you'll see Crowded House live at the Opera House 2015. Click on that. Then you can go to Associated Acts, Neil Finn. Click on that. Then you can find Instagram video from May 8th, 2018. And click on it. Then you'll find Mike Myers. Click on that.
Wow.
That's one... degree of Kevin Bacon.
1 degree of Kevin Bacon. Now, is that the official term?
Yeah, exactly.
When you're 1 degree away from someone, do you have to say, I'm 1 degree of Kevin Bacon?
I'm one bacon away from him.
You're making me crazy.
Oh,
man.
God. This is so exciting.
Guys, go on Neil Finn's Instagram and watch the video. It is so crazy to see.
I'm in awe and shock of this.
Yeah. Mike is going fucking crazy.
It shows that he's still got it. He's performing his heart out there. And he's wearing a great shirt. It says Canada on it.
And it's got the Joy Division. It's a parody of the Joy Division.
And that's
Unknown
funny
Pleasures
shit.
Logo.
I think some of the funniest jokes are Joy Division parodies.
Yeah. So that's Breaking Myers news.
Now into the main podcast, episode 1 of Mic Check season 2. We're kicking things off with the funny, sexy, cool movie known as the Blues Brothers.
John Belushi.
Yo, how much for your wife?
Dan Aykroyd.
After the gig, maybe we could, like, hang out together.
James Brown.
I heard the sound in my car.
Cab Calloway.
Hurry, hurry, hurry,
Ray Charles.
You know depreciation, man.
Carrie Fisher.
I must now kill you and your brother.
Aretha Franklin.
You're living with me now, and you're not gonna go sliding around with your old white woman friends.
Henry Gibson.
He better pray the police get to him before we do.
And the Blues Brothers Band.
Let's go, boys.
The Blues Brothers.
The Blues Brothers, directed by John Landis, released in the year 1980, is the very first Saturday Night Live movie. Jake Blues is just out of jail and teams up with his brother Elwood on a mission from God to raise funds for the orphanage in which they grew up. The only thing they can do is do what they do best, play music. So they get their old band together and they're on their way, while getting in a little bit of trouble here and there.
Wow, great synopsis.
I think I did a great read of it as well.
You did a really great read of that. Where did you pull that
from? Where did I learn to read?
Well, that too, yeah.
Yeah, I'm self-taught.
Interesting.
So I made it up based on watching the movie.
Okay, all right. So if I look at the page right now, it's a blank screen.
It's a blank screen and it's a photo of myself
that I just took. That's so freaking dope.
No, it's from letterboxd.com, which is a good website.
Awesome, dude.
Yeah, I love the web.
You're always surfing on the internet.
I'm a surfer.
But you know what?
Tim Winter novel should be written about my life.
There was a time in this world where there was no such thing as the internet. That time is, of course, 1980.
It was but a dream in the eye of Steve Jobs.
So people had to do different things to entertain themselves back then. They had to, honestly, pull out the old guitar.
The old two-string.
Pull out the old drum kit. The old tubs. Pull out that old rattling horn and start
just
a band.
Give it a little blow into it. Shoot the cobwebs out and get the band back together.
Get the freaking band back together and play some genuine rhythm and blues.
Play some genuine pony.
And that's exactly what these boys did.
Yeah, they, and of course, the Blues Brothers, titular Blues Brothers, Joliet Jake Blues, who is played by Jonathan Belushi.
And
Elwood Blues,
who's played by
Daniel Aykroyd.
Daniel Aykroyd. And Jonathan Belushi,
who are two of the biggest heroes. Well, one bigger than the other. Of SNL's storied history.
That is true. So this is the first official SNL movie because frickin' Juliet Jake himself, yep, Belushi, had become a huge star 1 year prior to this with Animal House.
Yes, which is also directed by Jonathan Landis.
That's right. So the only reason that SNL dipped their toes into the movie-making arena in the first place is because John had become a big enough star that they decided, we need to cash in on this shit.
Yeah, we need to put our money where our mouth is and make a fucking talkie.
Because when I think about SNL, the early years.
The early years. SNL started sometime in the 1970s.
We have researched this very thoroughly. Yeah. And we know for a fact SNL started in the 70s.
Which is one of the most iconic eras in American, nay be it, world culture.
When you hear 1970s, what do you think of?
I think about large collars, bell-bottom jeans, Scorsese, drugs, alcohol, the dirty streets of New York City before Times Square became Disneyland.
Before an acid rain came along and really cleaned up those streets.
And washed the streets away. You know, I think about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think about shirtless guys standing in the mirror asking it questions whether it had been speaking to them.
You know what I think about?
Yeah.
I think about 30 Rockefeller Plaza.
Oh, God.
I think about 11 or so comedians and improvisers, yep, who weren't quite ready for prime time.
Oh, no, no, no.
Given their own goddamn freaking show. And you know what I describe it as? I describe it as the inmates running the asylum.
Oh my God. How can these guys be in the establishment known as TV? These guys are quite clearly anti-establishment. And they come from the mainly National Lampoon's, which was a radio show, also a mag. It started as a mag.
Yeah.
And it evolved into another lost form, radio. And now it had turned into TV. So these guys are responsible for old media.
Yeah.
If they were alive today, they'd probably have a podcast.
Who was alive?
National Lampoon and John Belushi. If they were together today, they'd probably do a podcast where they talk about, I don't know, Charlie Chaplin or some shit.
Do you reckon if Elwood, welcome, sorry, if Aykroyd and
welcome
Belushi,
to Knott's Landing, where we see if Don Knotts landed a few jokes in one of his movies.
Do you reckon if Aykroyd and Belushi were on SNL now, the Blues Brothers would have been a podcast rather than a movie?
Oh, I think they would have been a rap duo.
Yeah.
They would have been rappers.
The Rap Brothers.
The Rap Brothers. That's definitely what they would be. For sure.
That's awesome.
So Blues Brothers, if you're not familiar with them, they're the world's most famous cover band in history.
It's the weirdest thing that these guys became big as the Blues Brothers, because they were a hit before this movie came out.
Yeah, and they're not... I hesitate to say they were from SNL sketches.
No.
Because they were kind of just a musical act that appeared on SNL with like Howard Shore's band.
Yeah, they were musical guests. And I think it's because...
Howard Shore, by the way, Academy Award winning composer of the Lord of the Rings franchise.
That's right.
He was like the band leader and composer for SNL in the 1970s.
And I picture Howard Shore in the 70s. A full head of frizzy hair,
yeah,
smoking a doob backstage, thinking, I got to really put some rockin' shit on the airwaves tonight.
And Gandalf is but a dream in the guy's head at this point. He doesn't know anything about the world of Mordor that will be coming in his future.
So let's talk a little bit about the history of the Blues Brothers, which you and I have
extensively
researched.
We got extensive knowledge on all things rhythm and blues.
So, famously, John Belushi was into death metal
just interrupt you? I think they should not have called them Jake and Elwood. They should have called them Rhythm and Blues.
Can I interrupt?
One's name is Rhythm.
Can I interrupt something?
No, allow me to finish.
No, I'm interrupting because you've interrupted me. And I'm going to interrupt your terrible bit.
Go ahead.
And say that's a bad idea.
Okay.
Because Jake is a cool name.
Yeah, okay.
And
what about Joylet?
Jesus Christ. Are you blazed right now, dude?
I'm a little unstoned.
So, okay. So, Belushi was into metal and punk and stuff. He thought blues was lame.
Really?
And then one night, Dan Aykroyd said, brother, I'll show you some real shit. Come with me down to this old blues club. And they went and watched John Lee Hooker play the six-string guitar. And while he was jamming and growling out those songs, Belushi had a freaking awakening from the audience. He said, this is the real shit. This is where all the stuff I love came from. It's these old classics. So he immediately said to Aykroyd, we need to start a blues band. And who
post-haste.
Who else to turn to but Howard Shore himself from The Lord of the Rings. So they put a little band together.
And Howard Shore is like, ba-da-dum, bum, bum, ba-da-dum, bum, bum. It's like, hang on, put a little stank on that.
A little stank on that. Let's put it on a Wurlitzer instead of some freaking strings and shit.
Yeah.
Get some horns in there, Howie.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, Lorne said, you guys are great. You're going on TV.
Putting you on the air.
Which makes no sense because it was just covers.
Lorne just said, funny stuff.
It wasn't funny. I've seen the videos. They're
Lorne's
not
just
funny.
Like, right.
They start appearing as a musical guest. Then they put out an album, a briefcase full of blues, and it inexplicably goes to number one in the charts.
Oh my God.
And I don't know why to this day, because it was just the two cunts from SNL singing old songs, old gospel and R&B songs. It makes no sense that it would go to number one.
Yeah, the world's number one album today, Bobby Moynihan. And Fred Armisen play old standards.
That would never happen
that
today.
Could not happen.
That's what the 70s was like, though. Things were a bit wacky.
People were strange back then.
People are strange when you're a stranger.
Gosh, to be a fly on the wall of SNL.
Yeah, man. What do you reckon you'd see?
Oh, probably a lot of coke being snorted up. You'd really see...
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
People like Chevy Chase falling over.
Yeah.
And then Lorne would go like, let's put that on the air.
Yeah, then you go into another room. There's Jane Curtin there. What's she doing?
She's reading today's sketches.
Yeah, she's studious.
She's getting ready for it. Go
into
like
another room. It's Gilda. What's she doing?
She's rehearsing a new character. Okay. She's got glasses on, putting on a big wig.
Okay, she's coming up with
with that character that she plays. That character that she plays iconically on Weekend Update.
Yeah, that famous character that we know.
We just know that character so well.
It's iconic and everyone knows it. We know it. It's iconic.
Inspired so many people and so many great women to get into comedy. So important, of course.
It's really important.
We know the character. We know all about that. Obviously, we know everything about SNL, you know?
And then we go down the hallway. Garrett Morris is there. What's he rehearsing?
Oh, he's trying to figure out who he even is. Probably Ant-Man?
Yeah. Okay. He's doing that.
Trying to write that Ant-Man sketch?
He's just trying to figure out what he's doing there.
Yeah.
We go down another corner. Who else would be there?
Probably
none other than...
A lot of comedians getting their start in the industry on TV, which is so exciting. And it's so exciting to see that this is the first movie from SNL because it's such a big movie.
It's huge.
And dare I say it, this might be a film because this is insane. Like the way that John Landis has filmed this, I think it's a very good looking comedy. It's got some amazing set pieces. And what I noticed on this rewatch, I hadn't seen this movie in many years. It's got wonderful lighting, which just really kind of surprised me a lot. It's got a great glowing feeling, and it creates something very special.
I'm glad you've complimented the movie because it famously went so over budget that it was the most expensive comedy ever made for a very long time.
That does not surprise me. This film is pretty insane. There's some insane stunt sequences where the boys basically rip apart a walking mall with their car. Bluesmobile.
It also had the record for the most cars destroyed on film, and that was only surpassed in 1998... by its own sequel.
The Blues Brothers 2000?
Yeah, that's what one thing we got to look forward to is to see more cars get trashed.
Oh, God, I can't wait to talk about my favorite movie of all time, The Blues Brothers 2000.
Here's a fun fact about Belushi for you. At the time that this movie came out, he was in the top grossing film of the year, the top grossing TV show of the year, and had a number one album with Briefcase Full of Blues. Dare I say it?
Dare you say
is
it?
Is this guy the Donald Glover of his time?
This guy was the Childish Gambino of the 1970s and 80s.
That's exactly what he was like. Because I've mentioned it earlier on this podcast, but Donald Glover can do anything.
The guy does stand up. The guy does music. Mm-hmm. The guy does writing comedy show. He does direct the same comedy show.
Yeah.
And he is in movie Star Wars Solo. Play Lando.
If Belushi was around now, maybe he'd be doing all those things.
Maybe he'd be playing Jabba the Hutt in Star Wars.
Let's talk about John Landis as the director of this movie.
Oh my God, John Landis, he's one of those guys that's a big influence on me as a filmmaker. I don't know if you know this, I make short films.
Yeah, I did know that, actually.
John Landis, I think he's just one of those guys, I think, elevated comedy to cinema. I think in the 1980s and the end of the 70s, there was nobody really quite like him making as many great comedy films that did feel worthy of being on the big screen as well. I'll read you a crazy run of films that this guy had back in the 70s. 1977, he makes his big debut. He'd made a film before that called Schlock, but in 1977, he makes a bit of an impact with the film The Kentucky Fried Movie,
which
is a bit of a cult classic, an important film as far as cinema comedy goes. But a year later, 1978, he makes Animal House.
We're going to have to watch that one, by the way.
Yeah, that movie changed it all.
That's a movie that cashed in on Belushi's SNL success to be the big hit that it was. So we're going to have to watch that one.
1980, The Blues Brothers. 1981, An American Werewolf in London.
Great.
1983, Trading Places.
Wow, another SNL movie.
Another SNL
Eddie
movie.
Eddie and Aykroyd in it. Yeah. Wow.
The year after, same year he made Twilight Zone, the movie, where things took a turn for the dark. I would say that. It's a very tragic, tragic story.
What happened?
Tragically, it's not funny at all.
No, it's not.
It's only funny in the context because I was saying how great he was and what a great run of films he had. And then we get to Twilight Zone, the movie, which tragically is one of the most tarnished films in history.
What do you mean?
Well,
explain
unfortunately, there was an incident on the movie that resulted in the death of three people.
Oh, no.
The result of the death of three people, two of them being children.
Oh my God.
So it's disturbing.
Oh my God.
Because there were not safeties put into place during the making of that film.
Yeah.
A helicopter did blow up and tragedy did happen. But because of it, now the safety laws are in place in cinema that were not there before.
Oh, you are sweating.
I'm sweating. I'm sweating. I make my money day by day as an assistant director whose main job is to make sure shit like that don't happen.
Your job and is to make sure helicopters do not explode.
Yes. So first day on job in AD, they give you the movie Twilight Zone on Blu-ray DVD. And you're meant to take notes. And after, they go, "Did you like the movie?" And I say, "Yes." And they say,
"Well,
read this."
Then they link you to the wiki article.
They link you to a Wikipedia page that says the tragedy did happen on that movie.
And then it makes you hate the movie.
But then after that, he got back on track and he made Spies Like Us, which is a film I've never seen. Three Amigos, Coming to America. That's just the 80s. His film's in the 80s. So pretty insane filmography. Really defined what comedy was in that era.
He, I've barely seen any of those movies, by the way.
Really? Wow. Yeah. We're going to have a great time watching them.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen Three Amigos. I didn't even know that was John Landis.
Have you seen American Werewolf in London?
Never.
Maybe
I know it's your favorite
movie. My favorite movie. It's in my top four favorite films of all time.
Let's go through those top four.
American Werewolf in London.
Yeah.
Saturday Night Fever.
Okay. Saturday Night Live.
Saturday Night... It's based on Saturday Night Live. The experiences of what it's like to go out after watching SNL. What you do? It's what you do after you've watched SNL.
You go, "God, I'm so pumped up from that Blues Brothers performance. I need to hit the disco decker.
I need to go get laid by the nanny at a disco." And then I would say Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery.
Yep.
Starring Mike Myers as Dr. Evil and Austin Powers. Then I would say Wayne's World.
Oh, wow.
Starring Mike Myers as Wayne and Garth. It's played by Dana Carvey, who are two famous SNL alumni.
Yeah, you have a lot of SNL in your top four.
Yeah, two movies and one inspired by SNL.
Yeah. This movie was written by Aykroyd himself, Dan Aykroyd.
Daniel Aykroyd.
Here's a fun fact for you. Did you know that he'd never written a screenplay before?
Wow.
And so instead of submitting a screenplay because he didn't know what one was, he'd never even read one, he submitted a 324... tome that was written in free verse, like a novel.
Oh my God.
That explained the backstory of the Blues Brothers and a detailed biography of every band member. and didn't have any story.
Oh, God. I did not know that at all.
And so John Landis was given this book that was the size of a phone book, allegedly, yeah, and just had to go through it in 2 weeks. They were already in pre-production.
What? How does it get greenlit from a guy going insane on paper?
Because they were such huge stars, and that people, there was a bidding war for this movie before there was even a treatment. People just wanted to cash in on that Belushi success. So then Landis, like, gets this fucking 324.
He writes the Silmarillion of Saturday Night Live.
And goes, Jesus fucking Christ, I got to do something with this. And he, in 2 weeks, edits it down to some kind of workable screenplay story, taking elements from all over this tome and turning it into a road movie, essentially. Yeah. But that's crazy.
That's insane, and it does show. Like, the movie is an insane film.
It's so long.
Because it's a long-ass movie. It's like 2 hours and 10 minutes long.
Yep.
I think if it weren't for the musical element and the sketch comedy element...
Musical element!
Musical elements! Aretha Franklin!
Yeah, if it weren't for the musical elements and the sketch comedy, it would be a
disaster of a film. Because
it'd be a fucking mess.
It's just so bizarre. The plot begins very slowly with Joliet Jake Blues being released from prison. And this movie, the first 10 minutes or 7 minutes or so, are almost painfully slow until we get to our first gag.
It feels deliberate, doesn't it?
Oh, it feels deliberate. I mean, but that was the pacing back in the day.
Oh, in the 70s, people were a little more freewheeling.
People were a little bit more free Willy Nelson.
There was a little more free love.
Oh, you're telling me.
Yeah.
Actually, a little more paid love in New York City.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Before Mayor Rudolph Giuliani came into power, crime was rampant.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, no one would do anything for free then. I'd do anything for a buck, though. I'd even fuck for a buck, dude.
Hell yeah, brother.
Yeah, so let's talk about the musical elements then, because you're right. They really do stitch this movie together.
Yeah.
If it weren't for those set piece songs... What would even this be? It would be just fucking Dude, Where's My Car?
Yeah, it would basically be that. Because it's them, Joliet gets out of prison. The first gag is him with Frank Oz. And it's not dissimilar from one of our favorite scenes in Austin Powers, where he's being released from prison and receiving a list of his old belongings that he came in with.
Yeah, the things that were confiscated before going into prison. And there's no Swedish-made penis pump.
No.
But there is something a little similar to that.
He has one...
What's the gag?
One prophylactic...
Unused.
Unused. One prophylactic extremely used.
The word that he uses is soiled.
Mm.
But I would love it if he went, one prophylactic... chock full of cum.
one prophylactic that's been shagged the hell out of.
That's a pretty funny scene. I do like that.
It's great.
That's the first gag in the movie.
Frank Oz, best known as Miss Piggy, best known as Yoda from Star Wars.
Yep. Best known as the director of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
And Score, starring Marlon Brando, Robert De Niro, and Ed Norton.
Really?
Yeah, he directed that? Yeah, man.
What the fuck is going on?
Man, the guy can do anything. He's basically the Donald Glover of puppets and directing and making cameos in John Landis movies.
Yeah, he has got a real Donald Glover vibe, actually.
Yeah, he's got it all, man.
And then the movie pretty much begins in earnest with the Blues Brothers deciding to get the band back together to raise $10,000 to save the orphanage that they were raised in before it gets knocked down or bought out by the government or something like that.
They owe $5,000 in tax.
Yeah,
which back in the 70s, that was a lot of moolah.
How much money was $5,000 in the 70s?
It was $5,000, but the exchange rate was much different back then.
Really?
So it'll probably be equal to, I don't know, $7 million or something like that.
Okay, awesome. But the movie is, of course, peppered with musical numbers, especially when they're getting their band back together.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go through a couple of them that I love.
Yep.
The first main, the big set piece one would have to be when they go to get Matt Murphy, their guitarist, from an old shit diner.
Oh, Greasy Spoon, if you will.
Greasy Spoon somewhere in
Chicago
somewhere
or wherever.
In Chi-Town.
Yeah, he goes down there and they order... strange things off the menu. They order dry toast. They order a whole fried chicken. Mm-hmm. And who are they giving the order to? None other than the diva herself, Aretha Franklin, one of the greatest singers of all time.
The godmother of soul.
She's amazing. She's one of the best singers of all time.
She's got an incredible set of pipes, this woman. And she's pretty good at acting, too. She's, dare I say it, she's the Donald Glover of...
of the 70s. Of the 70s. She could totally be the Donald Glover back in the day.
Yeah, if she really did more movies and had a TV show, I would definitely say that
she's Donald Glover. If she did stand-up, sure. Aretha Franklin never even fucking gave it a shot.
No, Aretha
Franklin didn't even try one open mic.
She didn't give a shit though, dude. She's killing it as a singer.
Honestly, she didn't need it. She was quite well known as a singer.
She sings Think to her husband as he says he wants to go rejoin the band. And she's like, hey, you better think. But she says it in song.
You better think.
And it's iconic.
I love that scene. That's probably my favorite scene in the movie. It's my favorite musical number in the film, for sure.
It's your favorite song.
It probably is one of my favorite songs, but that exact rendition from the Blues Brothers soundtrack, I think, is some of her best vocal work because it's fun. I mean, sure, she has an even bigger range than that, but I think the way she sings it is so powerful and fun and just, it's just great. It's got a great little bounce to it.
Yeah, you were really bopping along on the lounge.
Yeah, I was.
I reckon that's my favorite rendition of it. You doing that, which you've been doing nonstop since the movie finished. Another classic would be when they go to maybe buy some instruments from a shop called Ray's Musical Goods.
Now, who could Ray be?
Ray Romano?
Could it be, hey, me, Raymond. I'm Raymond. Deborah, why am I in this movie?
Raymond Romano, who we think will win an Oscar within the next 5 years.
We do. We did declare that. Yeah. I do declare Ray Romano Oscar winner future.
But this was not Ray Romano. No. Nor was it Ray Barone, his character from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Nor was it Rayman.
No.
The famous video character with no arms or legs, yet he does have feet and gloves.
Nor was it Ray of Light, the single by Madonna. But it was, in fact... Raymond Charles.
Ray Charles, best known as being played by Jamie Foxx in the film Ray. And do I declare it, Jamie Foxx, Donald Glover of the 2000s. The guy won an Oscar nominated for Others. He was a stand-up comedian. He also had a hit song with Kanye West, Gold Digger.
I'm sure he won a Grammy. He could EGOT.
He had a hot show. He was on TV doing stand-up, I guess.
Yeah, dude. He could EGOT for sure. Okay, they say, and Ray sings Shake a Tail Feather, and that's, I think, the best sequence in the movie.
It's great. So funny.
It's a great song.
It's a huge sequence as well. I forgot how big it was and how colourful it was.
It goes all over freaking downtown Chi-Town.
Yeah, it's great. You see the outside, which is an amazing, colourful mural painted, and it's got probably about like 50 dancers dancing to it outside.
It's beautiful.
Incredible.
Beautiful sequence. There's a lot in this movie, but there's two more that I think are the best two.
Yeah.
That is when they sing the theme from Rawhide.
Yep, that's in the Country and Western Bar.
Country and Western Bar, which is a pretty fucking iconic scene. And anytime anyone goes to a shit gig somewhere, I think of that. Whenever I know I have to drive out to the Sticks to do some terrible comedy gig, I pitch a chicken wire on the stage.
Just so you don't get hit by bottles. I think it's so funny when the bottles are being tossed at them on stage, even when they're doing well.
Yeah.
And just intermittently while they're talking through their set list and stuff, how they should change it up to please the audience.
It's great. Now, this final one that I want to mention is one that you strongly reacted to. And that's why I'm bringing it up.
Mm.
And that is... when Cab Calloway joins the band on stage to sing Minnie the Moocher.
Oh, so good.
You lit up.
I lit up, not unlike the stage that Cab Calloway was on. I think it's just a fun moment that is transportive in the way that classical musicals are.
Right.
Because the rest of this movie is quite a grounded musical. Sure, there's moments where we start going more heightened until we get into that magical musical... What did I used to call it? Musically enhanced reality mode. And that's when the performances start getting more enhanced and heightened until they break out into song. I think is a really good example of that. And Shake Your Tail Feather is a really good example of that. But this is more classical classical musical where there's a transformative moment where he goes out onto the stage with the band. He's no longer wearing his black, his classical Blues Brothers black suit and glasses and hat. He's now in a beautiful, perfect white suit with tails on it, like a 1930s style suit. And then he's got slicked back hair now, no glasses. And then the stage is gorgeous. It looks like a million-dollar production with all these amazing lights and a huge backdrop of a city. It just looks so great. And I think that's something more in the vein of your classical 1930s musicals, like Gold Diggers of 1933.
Oh, great reference.
Yes, Bugsby Berkeley,
it's a very Bugsby Berkeley very Bugsby inspired Berkeley. Set. I have a question. If they made this movie now, do you think that Cab Calloway's name would have to be Uber Calloway?
Honestly, for the kids to get it, props.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I think
so. Probably. Yeah. And that's such a funny as fuck little bit that you just did. Honestly.
Thanks, man.
You should be so proud.
Thanks, dude.
Because that's one of the funniest pieces of shit I've ever heard in my life. I'm cacking. I'm crying. I've had it up to here with it. It's so funny. I'm jealous I didn't say it.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's
man.
So good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is the kind of fun that Dan and John would have been having on set.
They would have. We are not unlike those two.
Yeah, I'm more like John because I'm the wild man.
And I'm more like Dan Aykroyd because he's got a big forehead and big nose.
Did you know that they apparently had a cocaine budget for this movie?
Oh, would not surprise me. Those guys love to put it away.
There's some story, famous story, that because Belushi was like partying all the time, they put aside a certain amount of film budget for booze and cocaine, and they built a purpose-built bar for him, like on one of the sets that only the crew and cast could drink at. So he would just be there all the time between filming, just doing fucking lines of blow and just down in whiskey. God,
that's he was a candle that burned far too bright.
He certainly was, yeah. But it would have been cool to see what he was doing if he was still around now. Like, maybe he'd be the old man in a sitcom.
Yeah, maybe. According to John.
Yeah. Maybe Jim Belushi's career never would have happened.
Yeah, if we didn't lose Johnny Boy.
Jeez, that's really sad.
But he's, honestly, John Belushi's one of my heroes. And I've seen most, if not all, the movies he starred in.
Yeah.
And because I just went through a phase as a teenager, just really going through them. So I just really connected with him.
Yeah, you've said this to me before. I want to know why. I want to get to the bottom of it. Why? What is it about John Belushi that you are drawn to?
I think there's an energy and spontaneity about him. And there's a thing about him that I think is quite unique, where he looks like he's capable of anything, but it doesn't feel dangerous in a way at all. You know what I mean? Like, I think if you just think about him, like, oh, there's a danger about him. But when you watch him, you feel like you're in the safest hands ever.
It's like a teddy bear.
He's just, I think he just has a unique energy and essence in comedy that no one has been able to really capture.
And no one ever could because tragically,
we did lose him.
We did lose John Belushi in the 80s.
In the 80s. Yeah. The 80s were a hell of a decade.
I mean, I can't wait to get to it.
I mean, this movie's from 1980.
This movie's from 1980.
We're kind of in it. But technically. It was made probably in the
70s. It's a product of the 70s.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a lot of people say that it takes a few years for a decade to really start. So probably we're not going to really talk about the 80s till 1984 or something like that.
Yeah, that's true. I think the 60s didn't start till 1968.
And then they really got going a year later.
Aykroyd, I don't know if you remember this, but he kind of tried to cash in on the success of Blues Brothers multiple times throughout his career. Yeah,
like Blues Brothers 2000
being
an example.
Well, before
that
even, like, he kept the band going after Belushi died and used to tour as the Blues Brothers and stuff. And did you, I don't know if you know this, did you ever see that shitty sitcom that he had in the 90s before Blues Brothers 2000?
What was it called?
Okay, this is one of my favorite bits of
I've seen probably YouTube
trivia.
Clips of it. I just can't remember anything about it.
So, I think it was, I looked it up before, 2 years before fucking Blues Brothers 2000 came out.
1996. For you those playing at home.
1996. He had a sitcom that lasted, I think, 24 episodes, and it was
like a season of 24.
Yeah, and it was called Soul Man.
What the?
And in the show, he played a reverend.
Yeah.
Who was also an old blues musician type dude who lived in the suburbs of Chicago or some shit with like his kids. His wife had died. And he like played in a band, but he also preached and had to put up with wacky neighbors. And this show, Soul Man, came about because he was a character who appeared on Home Improvement first as a backdoor pilot for this character.
I love backdoor pilots.
Yeah, I know.
I love backdoor pilots.
I knew you'd
pilots.
Love this shit. It's so lame. Like, so this character, whatever his name was, Reverend Aykroyd, appeared on Home Improvement and they were doing up his church or some shit.
Oh,
they were, like,
my gosh.
Renovating his church. So then the character was a hit, I guess, and they made this show. And in the first episode, Al from Home Improvement is in it.
Yeah.
And then I think in a later episode, one of Tim the Toolman Taylor's kids is in it and shit. As like
JTT's going, probably just like, probably
going to like
going
Sunday
to
school
confession.
Or something.
You see a confession of JTT.
But it was such a like him trying to remind people that he was
a
involved in blues and shit. Because I remember the theme song was his cover of Soul Man.
Wow.
And
not from the movie. He just did it by himself.
Just did it. And then it was, you know, in the movie, he was always playing the harp and stuff like that. And like joining session
harps,
bands.
Like
shit.
The mouth harp.
The mouth organ.
Not the instrument played by little cherubs.
Not the cherub instrument. Although he was looking a bit cherubic himself at this era. Mm. And then that was obviously a bit of a shit show that didn't go any further. But a year after that, he was like, well, I guess I'm just doing Blues Brothers again.
Yeah,
I'm,
you forced my hand.
Yeah,
you forced my
I'm
hand.
I'm going to have to do it. Yeah. No one's buying this priest character. I
can't wait for Blues Brothers 3000 to come out.
Yeah, dude. Another millennia. That's going to be the best.
Can't wait. That's crazy. Because Dan Aykroyd, I think, he's really well known for being wacky more than a comedian now.
I don't even think of him as funny.
No, because I just think of him as the guy that invented Crystal Head vodka and believes in aliens.
And another weird screenplay story is that his original script for Ghostbusters was like
insane,
twice as long and had all these like multiple dimensions and heaps of accurate detail about spectral visitations and stuff. And whoever the fuck... Was that Ivan Reitman?
Yeah, Ivan Reitman.
Ivan Reitman was like, this is unworkable. What the fuck are you doing? Make this more funny and interesting, please. He's a lunatic.
Yeah, but he's great. He's one of the SNL alums that we're celebrating on Mic Check Season 2.
That's true. And this was the first SNL movie. And I have a question for you. I have two questions for
you. Okay. Question number one. Sock it to me.
Did this movie make you horny?
Yeah, you know what? I think this movie may be horny, for
really?
Sure. Yeah.
Which sequence?
The Cab Calloway sequence I thought was really, really cool. Yeah. I think that was great. It just made me horny for history because I think it's just like, this is such a tome itself into where comedy that we're into really did start.
Totally, dude.
Because it's got so many iconic little characters and cameos in it. Carrie Fisher's in this movie playing the ex-girlfriend, ex-fiancé of
John Belushi.
You've just
stumbled onto why this movie made me horny.
Really?
I've never been a huge Carrie Fisher fan. I don't know Star Wars all that much, so she's not like an iconic person to me, the way that she might be to you.
In my nerd culture.
You might view her as your princess.
Yes.
But for me, growing up watching this movie, this is who Carrie Fisher is to me. And so that sequence where she's holding that bazooka and she's in the sewerage.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a hot mama. I want to smooch her right on the lips.
Okay.
Yeah.
And of course, she's also best known as playing the therapist in Austin Powers. The International Man of Mystery.
That's right.
And also Charles Napier is in both of those films
another
as well.
Another SNL. Austin Powers.
Austin Powers alum. He graduated from the School of Powers. He, of course, plays the general in Austin Powers. In all, I think, a few of the Austin Powers movies, actually.
Yeah.
He plays a guy that's on the phone at the start of the Austin Powers International Man of Mystery.
Feed my fish.
Yeah.
Not too much. That's one of his iconic lines.
Very, very funny.
My second question for you is, do you think... And I'm going to ask this after all of them.
Yes.
Well, you can ask me.
Sometimes we'll switch it up.
Do you think this is the best SNL movie ever made?
I think this is a strong contender for it.
Okay.
I absolutely do. I think it's going to take a lot for me to push Wayne's World out of the top spot.
Yeah.
I think that movie, I've gone on the record on this podcast many times saying I truly believe that is a movie that is an unsung masterpiece. The only person singing it is me.
Well, I guess it's maybe too soon to tell. We do have some other great SNL-related movies coming up, including Dirty Work and Deuce Bigalow, Male Gigolo. So one of those could knock it off.
One of those could knock it out.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure knocking one out with you again today.
Oh, I'd love to knock another one out with you soon.
We probably will. Thank you so much, guys, for joining us on the first episode of Mic Check Season 2, The Deuce Man, where we will be talking about all things SNL movie-related. We're going to talk about a few of the best-ofs as well. I can't wait to do those.
Uh-huh.
We've got a bit of a plan with this season where we will be kind of getting a bigger historical insight to find out who the messiahs before Mike really were.
And also, we are going to be touching in on Mike every now and then. We have Terminal coming out, which we're currently in the midst of wrangling ourselves a screening of.
Oh, because it does come out in the States, like, immediately as we're recording this.
Yep.
But there is not much going with it in Australia. There's one screening that we've discovered, but it's nowhere near where we are.
It's in Brisbane, I believe. So
we are on a mission from God, so we shall see.
We're on a mission from God to get to that screening in Brisbane. If anyone else is in Brisbane or around that area, try and get tickets to Terminal. I think it's on at Monsterfest.
It's that Monsterfest traveling sideshow, which is one of my favorite film festivals is Monsterfest.
Yeah.
They're a great company that distribute a lot of great kind of monster movies, horror films, cult cinema or future cult cinema here in Australia. They're a local distributor and they do really great work. They do high-end Blu-rays as well of great films. This is not a paid plug, just begging them to get us there.
What else can I tell
and that's
you to
on
do?
May the 26th, I believe.
Yeah,
May
right,
26th. So check that out there. You'll be the first people in the country to see Terminal.
And hopefully we're up there with you. That's
and if
what we're
we are, say hey. We'll be obviously dressed in character wearing our hats to see a new Mike Myers movie on the big screen.
And we will be obviously very recognizable because we'll be the only people screaming every time Mike is on screen.
Mike. It's Mike.
Also, you can chat to us on Twitter at MikeCheckPod. You can talk to us individually. I'm at I am Cameron James on Twitter and Instagram. And you are?
At This is Alexi on Twitter and Instagram as well. We've also rebooted a brand new podcast. It's called Total Reboot with Cameron James and Alexi Toliopoulos. It's a movie chat podcast where two funny fellas go through reboots, remakes, and rip-offs in cinema history to see if they are Shagadelic Baby. And right now we are in the midst of a very special mini-series of Star Wars to celebrate the release of the Childish Gambino movie Solo coming out later this month. So we're starting at the very, very beginning where Star Wars began, as a Akira Kurosawa movie called The Hidden Fortress that George Lucas decided to remake with monsters in space.
If you are a movie nerd, you will love this podcast. So subscribe, listen, and engage with us on the internet.
Yeah, you can find that on iTunes. It'll also be in the show notes for this episode. So it's just a little tap away.
We are back. We're regular. So please keep on giving us them 5 stars.
Yeah, baby.
On iTunes.
Give us 5 stars on iTunes. And how would you like them to let it be known on iTunes that this is a 5-star one?
You can recommend a specific actor based spin off pod, which we are going to be doing. An example of that would be, have you got any examples, Lex?
This one comes from Rubinator1991. The podcast is called I Don't Be Levitt with Cameron James and Alexi Toliopoulos, a podcast about Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
That's pretty good.
I think that's a real good
that's
one.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah.
He starred in that TV show.
10 things I love about Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Okay, number one.
He's cool. And number 10 is he dances. And you can hear the rest when we do I Don't Be Levitt.
Guys, thank you for joining us. And might I say, it's good to be back, baby.
It's good to be back in the MCR. Love you guys.
It's my check. It's my check. The podcast by Mike Myers. Woo, 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 woo. And we're clear.
Maybe just go through the actual SNL official movies.
Oh, okay. This is going to be tricky because I haven't really organized them as such. Give me one sec.
Just get up on Wiki and I'll just go.
I know how to get it up, dude.
Okay. What's that little blue pill you're taking?
Don't worry about it, man. I'm about to get it up.
Get
Saturday
it up,
Night Live.
Baby, get it
Feature
up.
Feature films.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.